That you still have this 10-year-old Mac, because you always seem to have the best of everything, right? Like material, like object wise. But
well,
not to say that that was a great computer in its day, but
it was the best. It was the best.
Yeah.
But I have an AMD Threadripper, like two GPU workstation that I bought.
Will you run Windows on it?
No, I run Linux on that one, and then I have Linux. a Dell, I don't know, some Intel Core i11, whatever. I don't even remember what the hell I bought, but so I have like really relatively new stuff when it comes to
on the Intel side or on the
on the x86 side. Well, technically, this Mac Pro is an x86 still, so I have three x86 machines.
Oh shit, that's right.
Yeah, my laptop is an M1 Mac Pro, but. But yeah, I mean, the thing about the Macs is that it's my primary workstation. It's like my little window onto the world where I do all of the remote work as well. Like even with the Linux and the and you know all the internet-based stuff I do, I still use it from my Mac. But yeah, when I was working full-time, my MO was kind of just buy the most expensive Mac Pro I could afford at the time, which is basically just the top of the line one, because
with all the options
gets
to like used car territory in terms
of price. And then not in 2014. So this one I think $6,000 in 2014.
Oh, that's modest today.
Yeah, today that's modest. Maybe
that's
adjusted
the monitor today.
Right, yeah. Maybe adjusted for inflation it was like a $10,000 workstation, but so what I do is I buy for my primary workstation, I buy the best Mac I can and then use it for as long as I possibly can. So I've been toying with the idea of buying a new Mac Pro, like one of the M2 or whatever the fuck it is, Mac Pro cheese graters, which is kind of a useless differentiation from the Mac Studio, but you know, like that's why I've been putting it off, because I want to buy the
dude. You could get by with a maxed out Mac Mini, though. It's probably expensive anyway.
It's not like
you're gonna save money on a.
I just want like the sick new Mac.
You don't want a tricked out Honda Civic.
No, I don't. Yeah, exactly. I just want the sick new Mac Pro Tower, dude. That's what I've always done. So.
You know, I've got this base M2 8, like I got it at Costco. It was on sale for $499, and it's eight gigabytes RAM, 256 storage.
I'm sure it runs circles around my trash can. Yeah,
dude. I was using before this. I was using a computer from, it was like a i5-760. I don't even know when that thing came out. It was probably around the same time you got your Mac.
Dude, my laptop and, that I bought in 20, maybe 2019, maybe 20. I can't even remember. It's one of the first M1 Mac Pros with MacBook Pros with the without the MagSafe and like with that shitty little like touch bar thing. And that thing is like way faster than my workstation.
Way faster, yeah, man.
Way faster.
I'm a huge fan of Apple Silicon. I think it's pretty badass.
Yeah, it's next level for sure. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if I happen. I think we're going to talk about this today, but if I happen to find a or somebody offers me a new job where I have to do actual work all day long, then I'll probably have to do or upgrade to the new
do a little capital M2. Expenditure.
Yeah, and actually Apple has a refurb program where it's factory OEM refurb and you can get like a $2,000 discount on a $10,000 machine. So it's so it's actually pretty good if you're like if you're an actual professional and you know you're like upgrading your machine for the first time in 10 years, that's like a pretty good discount. It basically wipes away all the sales tax that you would pay, and then you know you like somebody like me would just tax deduct it, and then So, anyways,
all right, so what are we talking? We talked about a lot, but like we talked about this. We talked about going asset light. We talked about going to getting the fuck out of California and maybe the United States. We've talked about getting a job.
Getting a job. I mean, I don't know. I feel like my personal situation is kind of reflective of maybe a lot of people right now in this economy and in this financial situation that the U.S. finds itself in, and also the geopolitical situation that the world finds itself in. Like, it just seems like everything is kind of coming down to a decision point and the election and all that, right? Like, I think a lot of people are just sitting around kind of like me in different, in various scenarios, just waiting for a fucking, just waiting for some clarity to make some kind of decision in the next, let's say 12 to 18 months. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like to me. I don't know if that's real. I have no way of knowing.
I mean,
if that's
I think
real,
that but... maybe, I don't know if everyone would describe it that way, but I do think people in that I've talked to, like, across the board, man, it's not limited to a particular type of person that I know or whatever. It's coworkers, it's friends, it's family. And they all express something like roughly similar to what you say, whether they put it down. Let's put it this way. Everyone feels like there is some sort of inflection. There's some sort of like a limbo or purgatory type situation that we're in. We're in a holding period, but something seems to be
Purgatory. Yeah. Purgatory would be a great way, a great word to describe what I'm feeling right now, personally.
Mm. Meaning like a limbo. Sort
yeah,
of
like a limbo, like an in-between state. Yeah. You know that word liminal? It's like a liminal state.
Yeah, so it's the most overused. yet, a good word, you know, overused, but I like the word, I guess. In and of itself, it's not bad. But yeah, man, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I feel like I got to make choices now.
Choices need to be made. Exactly.
Choices need to be made.
There is no more cruise control for the, you know, I think a lot of people in the last, let's say 3 to 4 years from COVID to all the money printing and all that stuff, they were kind of just in cruise control. You could just do whatever. Mm-hmm. If you were making decisions about your future, it would be trending towards, or like tacking towards, a state of cruise control, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, oh, I used to live in the city, then I like moved out to the country and I work remote and I'm just on cruise control now. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that, you know, a lot of people did that in the last 3-4 years, and I think things are about to change in the next 1 to 2 years.
What do you think the nature of that change is? Is it economic?
I think it's mainly economic. I mean, you know, you can take a look at people moved. Now that like a lot of people are trying to move back, their entire working lives changed, whether they lost a bunch of money or made a bunch of money. That's a big change. Mm. The entire, like I said, geopolitical situation has changed. We have two active wars now and maybe a third trade war going on. So it definitely is completely different than what it was from 2019 to like 2022 and a half, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. And now things are just, they're definitely transitioning into a new era, I would say.
There are some trends that I've been hearing about. I haven't done a deep dive on the data to confirm it and stuff, but like some stuff that's pretty eye-opening is like how much of a percentage of total GDP government spending is, and also what percentage of the job growth, which you know,
crazy.
Is like fairly robust job growth, but it's all basically government jobs.
It's very high. It's very high.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard various people say anywhere from 35 to 45% of all GDP spending is government related.
I've heard 30% and trending higher. And I've also heard that that's roughly the amount of people in the workforce now who are either paid directly by or indirectly from media,
like, or
as a contractor,
like,
but working for the government.
Yeah. Right, or like defense or whatever.
Yeah. Which, I mean, look, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with government employment. It's great if you can get it. But I'm just saying that a lot of this growth seems... It seems like the economy is becoming state-owned in a way, or state-backed.
Yeah, I mean, they call it, you know, various people call it fiscal dominance, which I guess makes sense. Like, if the fiscal authorities are, like, directing money to go into places where they either directly pay for the payroll, or they're, like, one or maybe even two steps removed. I mean, think about it, right? Like, these numbers, like, 30, let's just call it 35%. If that's somebody's statistic saying that's directly, that's the percentage of GDP that's directly responsible for government, what about second or third order?
Yeah, second or third order.
Flows, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. It's got to be over 50, you know? Yeah. It's crazy. And, you know, that would make sense, because when I was working, you know, a couple of years ago, right before I sold my company and stopped working, the amount of taxes I was paying all in, like from top to bottom, state, federal, sales tax, fucking property tax, all this and that, dude, I calculated it out. It was like 60%. It was like super high.
Mm, yeah.
Super duper high. Mm. So, but
how do you that was against such high taxes?
Well, so that's that's against adjusted gross income, so that doesn't count deductions.
Oh, okay.
And when you own a business like I did, a lot of money goes to deductions, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, the point is, it's a big number. It's a really big number. So the amount of taxes.
The thing with deductions is like whether people fair or not, like it's money that you actually have to spend. Like that's money
you have to spend it.
You actually have to spend. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, and that's one thing that people people have never been in a situation where they own a business and they have to like do all their taxes and stuff, and they're like kind of like worried about it. Mm-hmm. I just tell them my standard line to them is, look, if you actually spent the money, mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about it.
Mm, yeah.
What they're concerned about is people who just hoard the money and then don't pay the taxes
and don't actually pay. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're actually buying shit and do it, you know, like conducting business and expensing stuff and actually going to restaurants and, you know, buying whatever, you know, whatever the hell it is, equipment, computers, travel, blah, blah, blah. They don't really care as long as you actually spent the money, because that's the whole point. They want you to spend the money to stimulate the economy.
Yeah. Yeah, man. For me, I guess I've been I don't know why, but I just like, you know, I've gone through the process of like owning an apartment in New York City.
Yeah.
And I made good out. I was just thinking about this the other day. I made a good return on it. I owned it for 8 years and it returned me 50% return.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
It wasn't like an expensive place. I mean, when I bought it, it was like it was a one bedroom in Brooklyn Heights, and I bought it at the time for under $500,000 and sold it in the mid 700s. Right. And, so I, you know, after closing and you cut the check to your mortgage bank and you cut the check to your, agents and lawyer, I get my piece, my payout. And it was for a few hundred grand. And that sounds great. You know, like, I'm like, yay, I got this check with like, you know, six digits on it. Yay. But I immediately understood. I'm like, I barely broke even, if at all. I might still be underwater given all the expenses that were associated with that place over the course of 8 years. The number of special assessments, the maintenance, which included my tax, the special assessments, like all the special projects that I had to get separately assessed for, and the renovation, I had to renovate it. All that added up. I never fully did the math, but my gut instinct told me I'd be lucky if I broke even after all those expenses.
Yeah.
And that's not even including the mortgage expense.
Yeah. I mean, New York City is a kind of a special case though. Like if you own property in most other places and you're like kind of a handy person, it's not going to be nearly as expensive as it was for you. Mm. Like if you own a house anywhere in, I mean, even back in the, not, maybe not today, but like back in the day in California,
yeah,
where there's like basically no real weather you have to deal with, not counting disasters, because there are plenty of disasters in California. But yeah, it might have been better. Like, I think in New York City, you may have just broken even, maybe even. Right.
Well, my friends that have houses in the burbs, I don't know about well, I do have friends in California that own houses, and they've got similar problems. But like, I've got friends that, you know, live out other places on the West Coast, like Oregon, Florida, Maryland, sure, things like that. And yeah, they get hit with big projects. I mean,
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of a fucking crapshoot, right? Like,
yeah,
it's highly dependent on your particular situation. And I mean, it definitely helps to be handy. It definitely helps to know all about the stuff that you're paying for, or just do it yourself. That's big. That's,
yeah, but you're not going to regrade your own lawn or backyard, right? After seeing it flood, you're not going to replace your own roof. There's just things you're not going to do your own, unless like, yeah, but it's your fucking job. Like, you're not going to renovate your own.
Well, I mean, there's, I mean, dude, a lot of people just get ripped off on that kind of stuff, because they don't really know what's going on. So I don't know. All I'm saying is it's highly dependent on the individual that's running the property, that owns the property, and what they're able to bring to bear in terms of competence and resources. And
yeah, I mean, I got friends whose parents are contractors.
Yeah, which is to say, a lot. Which is to say, it could be a great investment or a terrible investment.
But setting all that aside, there's maintenance, yes. But there's also unavoidable expenses, which is, well, now there's the significant mortgage interest expense. And now taxes are going up. Insurance is going way the fuck up. And
now it's a different story today.
Yeah. And now I think, here's the other problem. All of those expenses in the past were sort of paved over by appreciation. And I get the feeling like the mega bull run in real estate's more or less over. I don't think we're gonna.
Yeah, I think
there's any juice left.
So my personal take on this matter is I think it's reached a plateau, and it'll maybe track inflation, but that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I wouldn't wait for. I'm not calling for any real estate crash or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna crash,
the very fact that it plateaus will change the game. I don't know if it can actually stay stable for that long, but like. Hopefully, I mean, I think it would be great if there was some stability.
So I think right now, as we stand from a general perspective, real estate is going to be something that, like we said, sort of plateaus. And the only thing that might save your bacon is if you can lock in a mortgage and just hope that the future levels of inflation on rent prices will outpace your mortgage to the upside, to the expense, like in other words, the expense will go up, and then you can like kind of just lock in your expected housing payment for the next 30 years, which, you know, I mean, maybe that was the entire point to begin with, you know?
That was the point. Right now, it's out of whack.
You're not going to make a shitload of money, but you can just like at least lock in your housing costs while rents go crazy. Maybe. Right. I don't know.
Though if rents go crazy, I think housing prices go crazy too. Right now, I think the stat is pretty much everywhere in the country, well, with the mortgage rates what they are, that ownership is significantly more expensive than renting. All right. So like housing prices have got ahead of rents, and they're going up.
I 100% believe that, and it's probably not a great time to buy a house, but if you have to, then you have to. But there is also the possibility that in 5 to 10 years rents go crazy and your mortgage stays the same. Right.
Why does anyone ever have to buy a house? I've heard this before. Like, people are like, it depends on your life situation. You may have to buy a house. And I'm like, who has to buy a house?
Nobody has to buy a house. Yeah. But I think what people desire is just that 30-year fixed number. They just want the number. right? Because just think about it, man. Like that's a sales pitch in and of itself, right? Like, forget about what you may have to pay in terms of fixes and repairs and all that stuff. But in the worst case scenario where you can't afford to do any upgrades or improvements or fixes or repairs, you know that your rent will be, I mean, that this is the whole idea behind rent control, right? This is like, that's the whole idea is let's bring the idea of a 30-year fixed mortgage or whatever to renters where they know that.
But my experience with that, I mean, I had a 30-year fixed, and the problem with that is that the interest, the mortgage payment's just one component of like a spectrum of liabilities that comes with home ownership.
Well, yeah, but when, and, right. But when you're a 25-year-old or 30, maybe these days 30-year-old looking to buy their first property, you don't know any of that. You're just going to.
Right. Exactly. I'm just saying now that I know, the reason I'm pretty loath to buy another property. I mean, I probably will at some point, but only because like, okay, I want this asset. Like I just want this place and I want to live in it.
So I would say that.
But the problem with my view on home ownership now is like, I focus on immediately what are my expenses going to be. And it's far from like, because I'll probably buy all cash. Like I don't care about the mortgage, right?
Yeah.
The thing that I'm worried about is all the attendant expenses, and my experience, along with the experience of a lot of friends, is there's a lot of shit to cover.
Yeah. Well, I will say that out of the wealthiest people that I know,
yeah,
more than half of them rent. Mm. They just don't care. They're like, yeah, I don't. You know, I have other assets that I. So maybe that's the thing. Like the quickest way to buy or the easiest way to buy an appreciating asset for most people, like the masses, is buying a house. Because my rich friends who have tons of fucking assets all over the place, they don't give a fuck because they have assets that produce them money. So they have no problem renting. They're like, whatever. I could just rent and then move next year. You know what I mean?
Are you talking about real estate assets or like businesses?
No, just all in, like everything.
Yeah.
So like the up and coming lower middle class family or person wants to get on the asset ladder, the easiest thing to do is get a mortgage.
Yeah.
Whereas actual wealthy people, they could take it or leave it. Some of them have mortgages, some of them don't. Because they have a bunch of other shit that produces money and revenue and capital gain.
Yeah, I mean, the people who bought my apartment were multimillionaires, and I was like, what are you doing slumming around buying my place? And the reason was, and they took a mortgage, because at the time, mortgages were fucking butt cheap.
Yeah,
they were cheap. And they were probably like, yeah, why would I give up my assets to pay this off when I can make
more money? Yeah, it's just an ARB. It's an ARB. They borrow it, you know.
Yeah.
3-4% and hope for 10% appreciation. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know.
The other thing is I'm worried about I guess my big concern too is just like, I don't want to be tied to like a home. I think that's the big thing for me is just like, I kind of want the flexibility to be able to just like bounce. I don't know why. I just get this itchy feeling, like, you know, I don't want to have to like sell a house in order to leave. You know?
Yeah. Well, so that's the situation that I'm in. And I think that's what we were actually going to talk about tonight.
Yeah,
right. Like, what the hell is going to happen in the next couple of years? Do you stay where you are? Do you move around? What's going to happen? So I've been looking at, excuse me. I've been looking at potentially selling my place and moving to, maybe not moving per se, but just like going on a little bit of a
becoming like untethered,
unmoored, untethered. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I've got, like, after having worked in technology for 20 plus years, I have friends who are doing all of the above, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have friends who have spent an incredible amount of money on their home and renovations and all that. I have friends who are literally just traveling the world out of a backpack and who are still working, which is kind of amazing to me.
Between those two extremes, like, which one feels more appealing? I feel like, I don't know if you're going to go all the way to backpacking around the world, but I feel like you're trending in that direction more so than laying down roots and building your Shangri-La.
Yeah, neither of those extremes appeal to me in the sense that I've done both of those things in short stints, and I know I don't want to, like, do either of those things permanently.
Yeah.
But the question is, well, then what do you do in between? You know what I mean? Especially if like, okay, you have a bunch of equity built up in all the stuff you own. Let's say you sell all that, and then you have a bunch of money that you could just theoretically live on for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Like, do you actually go the nomad life, which I definitely don't want to do? Or do you try to figure out something in between where you, like, live in a place for a couple of years and you try to do a little work here and there? But at the same time, like, that doesn't feel that appealing to me either. You know what I mean? Because I kind of did that.
You're sort of talking like digital nomad life?
Sort of, but a little bit more permanent than that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, live for somewhere for two or three years at a time.
Foreign country.
Foreign country.
Yeah.
Because...
like fucking Southeast Asia. Something like that.
Yeah, Southeast Asia, yeah. But also... I don't know, man. Like, it's interesting. Like, there's a whole... there's like three different axes that you can operate on here, right? It's like a three-dimensional space where there's where you're actually at in the world. That's one dimension. How long you stay there, that's another dimension. How much you work, that's another dimension. And like, all of these things have very significant effects on your life and your finances, right? So like friends who have just poured a bunch of money into their house and they're there for good. They're like max scale one, max scale two, and then they're retired. So like,
yeah,
zero scale three. Mm-hmm. But then I have friends who are traveling all the time, working, I don't know, like 20 to 30 hours a week doing work, and they're staying in each place like 2 or 3 months at a time. So that's more towards the other end of the, you know, the three-dimensional space or whatever, right? So I don't know. Like, how do you even decide?
I think maybe you just start doing it. I mean, it's all maybe a matter of perspective or of perception, right? Like, I feel like people these days, like, are very systematic in their thinking because they're trying to impose order on the world, right? Like, you guys are just, you're like decision tree oriented people in the tech world and very logically inclined.
That's fair. Yeah.
But life, I feel like, is inherently not like that. Like it's not like three axes. It's like, you know, it's like infinite fucking axes. There's just like an element of, this is my experience, right? I'm not dictating what I think, how the universe actually, I'm just saying my experience has been, there's an element of chance and there's an element of like fate maybe, or there's an element there, basically, like there's a lot of like plot twists along the way that I found that are you know, not predictable.
Right.
And the problem with people who just have a lot of of Axis 1 and 2, I guess. I think, you know, in just in terms of like being locked into a particular set of responsibilities for a long time, is like they're closed off to any of these serendipitous changes or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. So that makes a lot of sense. I've been living in this city for 15 plus years. I honestly don't even remember.
Yeah.
How long I've been here to the year.
You mean Santa Monica in
particular? Santa Monica, yeah, California. And then so I think the thing that I'm yearning for the most maybe is just getting the fuck out there. Mm. And not having any kind of boundary.
Yeah.
For the time that I spend. So I don't know. I sound like a fucking nerd when I talk about axes and dimensions. Right. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just kind of like the mode that I've been in.
Yeah.
While running the business and like sitting in this place, which, you know, we're on video right now. You know, it's obviously a nice place. I don't have any problem with this place.
It's nice but, in my place.
I mean, it's a fucking apartment. I mean, it's like if you're sitting in an apartment, it doesn't really matter where you are.
No,
you're kind of just locked into where you're at. Right?
Yeah, wherever you are, there you are.
Right,
like, wherever you go, yeah, there you are.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So. Yeah, like I've got
it's almost as if like the 3 feet around me, that's the actual environment I live is just like the 3 feet of air,
right?
And no matter where I go, it's the same fucking 3 feet.
Right. As long as you can stand up and like do some fucking stretching, like you're fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you're in a place where you can't stretch out,
yeah, then, like in a prison cell.
Yeah, like then maybe you have bigger problems.
Yeah,
but
if you're free, if you have freedom of movement, you're more.
Yeah, alive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, agreed. Yeah. No, I think. I mean, I had like a very there was one day where I was just like, fuck it, man, I just cannot do this anymore, and I think I was 39 or something like that. 39.
I'm 40.
So you're 40. You're right around that time where I was just like, bro, you know what? Cause like you've talked about this and I relate. I mean, in a somewhat different way, but like, cause I was more just like a career grinder guy, not an entrepreneur, but there's a similar burnout, I think, that can occur.
It's all the same.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, I was just like, I'm fucking 39, grown-ass man. I've never just given myself some fucking time off. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always asking for time off. I'm always planning for time off. I'm always clear my time off with other people. And I was
you have to engineer your time off.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? I'm out. You know, I basically told my bosses, like, please lay me off. Because I heard there's layoffs in the wind. I know you guys always fret about who to lay off. Just
I'll take a package. I'll take a package.
Yeah, I'll take the package. Yeah. And they responded and they were like, okay, fine. You're fucking out of here. I was like, yes. And
great.
I think I just didn't do shit for a year. I literally didn't do shit. And it was life changing.
Yeah. So I'm on year three of doing that now.
Oh, wow.
So I stopped working in 22.
That's pretty recent.
Damn. Yeah, that's not. It's not that long.
Yeah,
like early 22, though, like January 22. Mm. So yeah, it's gonna be year three soon. It's only been 2 years. Mm-hmm. But I must say it has been obviously awesome. But I think it. I mean, other than like my physical and mental health.
Yeah.
In terms of like questions, I think it raised more questions than it answered.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. But I also, I mean, and those questions remain unanswered, but I think I've kind of restructured my life around those questions, if that makes sense. Meaning like I've accustomed myself more to like not planning in a weird way. Like I'm more comfortable just looking, just like right now, I can't see past February because like I'm on this contract. I'm on a project until February, and I've been pressured by people to like make up, like, you know, like the place I'm working at is, you know, they're kind of subtly hinting like we'd like you to stay on, and you know,
of course, yeah, of course.
And I'm just, every time that pops up, I'm like, dude, I don't think that far ahead. I'm like, all I can tell you is how today's going, you know, but like come February, dude, I don't know. And I'm comfortable with that. Like I'm comfortable.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you be like, look, I'm going to take off in February, but I'll come back in June.
I might say that. I don't know if that's what I want to say. I mean, shit, come February, I might be like, look, I'm on a fucking roll right now. I'll just keep going. I don't know. I mean, maybe I will.
Maybe.
I
doubt it, maybe.
But, you know, but, I've noticed though, man, that the less committed I feel to a long-term plan, the more I just keep it relatively short horizon, the happier I am and the better I do. I feel like my work performance is like way up. My happiness at work is way up, and I haven't actually made significant changes, meaning I'm still on the same basic career path. I think a lot of people who are like, yeah, you need to make like radical changes. I'm more of the opinion that you just need to make maybe some subtle changes. I needed to make some subtle changes to my perspective, and then that made all the difference. But insofar as like life path, I'm on the same fucking treadmill as I was before. I'm just happier and I've got more speed, you know?
Yeah, you've got more breathing room in all directions.
Yeah.
So yeah, like right now I'm just considering I've got basically let's say three choices ahead of me, which is number one, which is the easiest, just continue down this path, sitting in the same spot, not working, living off my savings.
Yeah.
For until that runs out.
The way you described it, I can tell that's not viable.
It's not really viable.
I don't sound enthusiastic.
Yeah, I don't have like $100 million. I can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So and then number two is work. Except just work, right? And like have kind of a like a low stress situation in the very comfortable place that I've built myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, work every once in a while, or maybe work half time or whatever, you know, whatever that work situation looks like.
Yeah.
But it's basically just more of the same that I've been doing for over a decade.
Yeah.
And number three is just completely change it up. Right. Like move to Southeast. Like I don't think I would move to another place in the US. I've been everywhere in the fucking U.S. and
yeah, U.S. is pretty uniform too. I just feel like maybe the scenery changes, but like the culture.
Well, it's just like it wouldn't be much of a change. You know what I mean? Like I've been to all these places, and not only that, I could just go to any of these places any day of the week.
Yeah, and things kind of cost the same. I know, like cost of living might drop a little bit, but like,
I could just buy a $300 plane ticket and go to any of these places, and it's. And be there in this like the same day, like same morning, even.
Yeah.
You know, like if I leave here at 5 a.m., I'm in New York by noon. You know, so it's maybe not noon, maybe like 2 or 3, whatever the time difference is, but the same fucking day, you know.
I thought Carl Za, like his story was pretty like much more dramatic, like a dramatic illustration of
so then that's the third option.
Yeah,
you just completely switch it up.
But that's not what he did. What he did was his company was, which is based out of Southern California, I believe. He was in, or I forget which, I think he was LA, maybe Torrance or something like that.
And yeah, he worked for Toyota, right, or something like that.
Via like a consulting
company. Some contracting situation.
Yeah, and that contractor got bought by a company in Texas, and they told him like, "Hey, we're going to reload to Texas. Do you want to come?"
Well, Toyota also moved to Texas.
Oh, did they really? Oh shit!
Yeah, they used to be
migration out to Texas.
Oh yeah, Toyota Toyota used to be in Torrance, and then. Yeah. Because the biggest thing that Toyota makes in America is trucks. Mm-hmm. They moved to fucking Texas.
Yeah. Along with like all the Elon Musk companies and shit, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm sure all of their contractors just moved.
They're going to go. Yeah. So they offered him to move, you know, because they liked him. They were like, hey, why don't you come out to Texas? And I guess there was some sort of like cash out thing that he could do instead. And he was like, no, I'm out. So he took the cash out.
Took the money.
And yeah. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to take a little break, a couple few months, and I'm going to move out to China. Or not move out. I'm going to go on a trip to China to visit his father who was there.
Yeah.
And then he went there and he really was enjoying himself and he was posting from like all these different cities and he was like, oh, fuck it. I'll extend my trip a little longer. And then he extended it. And then it was like 5 months and 6 months. And then he was like, I'm going to go to, Bali. Cause some friends were like, yeah, why don't we come to Bali and do some good surfing. And then next thing you know, he's dating some local woman there and then they get married and now he has two kids and he's never Jesus. Fucking going back.
Jesus.
You know, he's like that. He's like those two astronauts that went to space and never came back.
Christ. Yeah. Well, so it's funny. I've got a friend. I've actually got two. So, okay. So this guy, he's actually a white guy. He moved to Bangkok. My buddy Alex moved to Bangkok and, like, this guy's like kind of a rich kid, right? Like he grew up in the right way and he went to name brand schools and he has a trust fund and all this stuff. And this is the guy you met. You met him in Boston.
Yeah.
And nice but guy. He, but
very
what?
Nice. Very nice guy. Very genuine.
Super cool,
guy.
A super cool guy, dude. Yeah, like very like very like what you see is what you get, right? Not like a weirdo at all. Mm-hmm. And he ended up just like getting divorced. And like during his divorce, he ended up going to Thailand. And, you know, like he went back and forth for a couple of years. And, you know, I went out there and hung out with him and, you know, just like kind of was just a friend during his divorce. And like, you know,
you were having fun.
Yeah, I was having fun, too.
Yeah. It's like an excuse to go out there.
Yeah, go, you know, go out and like check out the beach and check out all the Russians who are hiding from fucking embargoes or whatever, like we're hanging out in Thailand. Mm-hmm. It was pretty funny. But anyway, so he finally signed a lease in Bangkok. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like this guy's going out there like maybe I could do that. Like I don't really have anything else going on anymore. You know what I mean? So that just kind of like, you know, and this guy's like not the loser back home stereotype, right? This guy's not that thing. And I was just like, holy shit, that's kind of wild. And then I had another friend who just moved to Vietnam. And this guy was an Asian guy. And I was like, oh, that's kind of crazy. Like, dude, I'm like, why are all these people fucking moving to Southeast Asia? Mm. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I've had similar thoughts.
So, you know, that was like maybe a year ago now. And then I'm just sitting here doing the same fucking thing day after day. Just chilling out. Not
why would
working.
Going out there be changed it all up, though? I mean, like, you could just fucking go.
Like, well, I would have to look. I would have to sell my place.
Why?
First of all, because I don't want to rent out my place.
Yeah.
Well, because the amount of equity I have in this place would come in real fucking handy if I.
No. I'm saying. Well, rental income would come in real handy too, wouldn't it? It costs a
living. The net on the mortgage and the property tax would not. It would not be worth it.
I see.
It'd be stupid. Yep.
All right.
It's like, what's the best case scenario? I make a couple grand a month on margin, and then I have to pay taxes on it? It's fucking stupid.
It's fucking stupid, but it's better than just leaving it. You know, what I'm saying is if you went for a few months, you could just leave it vacant. If you went for a couple of years, you could rent it out. If you went forever, you could sell it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, again, these axes. There's three axes, dude. Where are you going to go? How long are you going to be there? And what are you going to do while you're there?
Fair enough. I mean, when it comes to making a choice about your place, you know, That's a systematic thing you got to do.
I think my personal look, I manage some properties for my parents, and it's a pain in the fucking ass.
I bet. Yeah.
Okay. It's a huge pain in the ass.
I bet.
And to
have that hanging around your neck.
Yeah, to have that hanging around my neck. The
all right. Well, then cut out the third. Cut out the middle. Then it's either you leave it vacant and just go for a couple months. And then, you know, if you're like, yeah, fuck, man, I don't want to go back home at all, and just fucking
then
put
just
it on
sell
the
it.
Yeah,
I guess that. Well, yeah,
you know,
that is some clarity right there. Yeah, maybe. Well, I am going to my buddy's place in Bangkok for New Year's.
Yeah,
this year. So maybe I'll check out see what he's doing. Yeah, it's kind of wild though, man. Like. You know, you can, as long as you've saved up enough money, you can kind of just go anywhere in the world. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And why would you, I don't know, man. I just feel like if I was a single dude, I wouldn't be, honestly, I don't think I would be, I'm lucky, I think, because, I was the thing I was looking for was very different. Like I was just like, more one I oh let's put it this way, I had no idea what I was looking for, but I knew that one, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna start dating, and like I was like, I don't want to do this very long. Like people around me have turned in the city, they've turned like dating into a fucking lifestyle where they're just like,
oh
yeah,
man,
every week I go on a couple dates, you know.
I have so much to say about this. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I just didn't want any of that. I was like, I'm gonna do Dude. This if it sucks, I'm out. And if I hit in the sense of like I meet someone I actually really care about, then I'm out too. So, but either way, I'm out. You know.
Yeah. And, so and I mean, this is part of the reason why I'm in this little situation where I have to make some decisions. Mm. Is basically basically when I was making a shitload of money running my company, I spent my entire 30s, not like entire 30s, like maybe 33 to like 39. Or like 38, just dating, banging a lot of chicks. And I didn't see anything that I would consider worth anyone. I mean, not anything or anything, anyone,
anything in sense of a relationship,
in sense of the,
you're not calling
the situation.
Them things, but you're saying,
yeah.
The thing with them. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
The situation,
yeah,
that I would willingly take that risk of marriage for.
Right.
There were a lot of cool chicks.
Yeah.
That I would not have married. There were a lot of not cool chicks, but who are really hot.
Yeah. That you definitely wouldn't marry.
That I definitely wouldn't marry. And I, after a while, I was just like, oh, this is like kind of a terrible situation.
Yeah.
You know, like... And I would, you know, I don't mean to flatter myself, but I would imagine that I'm on the more, what's the opposite of naive? Savvy?
Jaded or experienced?
Jaded, experienced, savvy. I was okay. Like, by the end of my 30s, I was more on that end of things.
Yeah.
So, like, if I were a completely naive dum-dum.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have gotten into a situation,
yeah,
at the end of my 30s where I got married and, you know, did that whole thing. Yeah, to the wrong person. But yeah. Like my personality is just not that, right? Yeah. So I just never felt like it was gonna be a positive thing in my life. So, and I think 99% of that is being in Los Angeles.
Yeah, man, it's a dating culture. Yeah, like my view on this now, like I consider myself like top tier in terms of happy marriage, to be honest. Like I'm just really lucky in that.
I mean, it looks like it. Yeah, you seem very happy.
Yeah, I'm just like super fucking content, right? I realize now that that game is a completely different game than the dating game. And it's really weird. Like there's so many absurdities to the dating game to me now where it's like the idea that you would date casually in essentially what's a hookup market. It's like the goal of that is to get laid for a lot of dudes. Let's be real about that, right? Or have like pretty short-term flingy type relationships, right?
Yeah.
That would then, you would just do a whole bunch of that. And the idea that that process was some sort of maximization algorithm that you would, out of the 200 or 100 or whatever it is that you're going to knock out, you would pick the best one or hopefully top five and marry one of them.
Yeah,
it's the most absurd idea.
It's pretty absurd.
It's so fucking absurd. Like, that's not even the right. You're climbing up, not even the wrong face of the mountain. It's not the right mountain. You know, like, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, that's the feeling that I had towards the end of it.
Yeah.
Right. Like toward like after. Like, let's not even count the 20s. Like in my 30s, like that entire situation, like excuse me, yeah, it felt like a gradient descent utility maximization,
yeah,
like problem, right? You know what that is, right?
Yeah,
you have a utility function and then you're just kind of blindly traveling down this fucking path until you think you got it right.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're a GPU, you can do this a million times a second.
Yeah.
But if you're a human being, you can only do this like 10 times a
yeah.
It's a fucking
silly. It's just silly
month
thing.
Or, you know. Yeah.
I mean, it should just be, people should just see it for what it is. It's just a carousel of fucking around.
Yeah, so
that's all it is, you know, like
So after close to a decade of doing that, and the last couple of chicks that I dated where it just completely did not work out, I was like, oh, okay, all right. So I think I'm just going to stop doing this.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to stop. This is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, it's costing me a shitload of money.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because I live in Los Angeles, not, you know, I don't know, fucking, you know.
A cheaper city.
A cheaper city.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't, like, I'm spending an incredible amount of money, like thousands upon thousands of dollars. So I'm like, all right, well, that's dumb. So I'm going to stop that.
You just feel like a chump after a while, you know?
Like, I mean, it's not that I felt like a chump.
I feel like a chump every time I drop money for shit I don't really enjoy.
I mean, it's not that. It's mm-hmm. that the ROI, at the end of the day, the ROI wasn't happening. You know what I mean?
That's my way of saying bad ROI.
Yeah, I mean, like the last couple of chicks that I dated before I just stopped, they weren't like terrible people or anything, but I could just tell that they were, you know, like maybe previous generations would have called them gold diggers, or maybe today.
Yeah.
But they were like fine. Like fine people, you know, like I was like, all right, this is fine. But I just didn't get the fucking warm and fuzzies, man. Like
I don't get it. Yeah.
I'm just way too cynical and way too much of a, like, I've seen people at their worst for way too long to even consider having any kind of like actual like marriage was completely out of the question.
Yeah.
And kids were completely out of the question. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just like, no way. Like, no fucking way.
But I mean, is that, I don't know if that's just you, man. You know, like, I think, I mean,
it could be me. I don't know.
I mean, just saying, what I'm saying is, looking back, I feel like I felt the same way, but it was like part of my, that was really me sort of being acculturated to like the general. To it was just me going along with the general culture right now, you know, like I was just being adaptive in feeling that jadedness where I was just like, I don't know. I just got, here's the sense I met some nice people, you know, but like you, like, I don't know if it fits what you're describing, but I just got the feeling like, you know, I feel like you're probably better off alone, you know, like I don't know if I will add anything to your life. And I'm not sure you're going to add much to mine, to be honest. I mean, you're nice, but I just don't see their point. The point, you know what I mean? Like, you're on some, your own trajectory going that way. I'm going this
way.
Yeah,
I mean, I would say that the last couple of chicks I dated, I definitely felt more like a number in a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Right. I was like,
like, it was a very impersonal.
It was very impersonal, actually.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy because it's like, you know, I remember when I used to date in high school and college.
Yeah.
And like, those girls actually liked me, right? Like, you could tell.
I think things were just more natural because
things were more natural
younger and less
like hung up on all this shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think a lot of dudes who fall into this kind of trap of like, you know, if you're in your 30s and you're making a bunch of money and you're like dating hot chicks, I think a lot of those dudes have never ever been in any other kind of situation. And then they just fall ass over, they get over their skis, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they get into these like traps.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I don't know.
No, I get it. I mean, I think it's, look, man, it's like any sort of euphoric experience, right? Be it any of like what we consider like the vices, whether it's fucking substances or risk taking, making loads of money, or, you know, hooking up with in situations that are less than ideal in terms of relationship forming. Like, you know, you get this euphoric high and you're just like, do whatever. You just get attached to that euphoria.
Yeah, and I think that must be it.
Yeah. And you're just like, you know, it's like your everyday is just filled with all this shit. And then you get this euphoric high and you're like, oh, this is what life is supposed to be like. Shit. Like, right. I totally understand this. I think I spent a lot of my life like this. It's like you have these euphoric moments and then you feel like, oh, shit, I just tasted what life could actually be like. You know, I've been living in the doldrum of
in the cloud, like I'm in the fog.
Yeah, and then suddenly you get lifted up and you're like, holy shit, you know, life could be like this. But I realize like that's just very illusory. Like, that's not actually
super illusory. Well, that's your own brain tricking you, because nobody else is out there tricking you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're tricking yourself, and then
you're tricking yourself.
I think it's the result of basically. This is getting a little bit psychological, but I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I think it's a result of just like the culture of, I think we're just taught, and then it's enforced heavily. Like, if you, once you see what you're look that you're, once you know to look for it, you see it everywhere, is a huge amount of cultural programming to chase euphoric moments and to do whatever and spend whatever it takes to stay in that euphoric state. And if you fall out of the euphoric state, you need to get back in there. And this is,
well, you know it's funny, like, I always think about, like, there are people who exist in this world who don't subscribe to any of that shit at all.
Oh yeah,
right,
that's good.
Like, think about in like there's a trope in LA, I don't know if this is a thing on the East Coast, but the trophy wife who's married but fucks the pool boy, right?
Yeah.
Or the yoga instructor or whatever.
Yeah.
Some ostensibly, like, not, look, maybe he might not be poor, but he's like the quote unquote poor guy.
Yeah.
But is
the
like
cable,
super attractive.
The cable guy or whatever.
Yeah, like, yeah. Or whatever, you know? And it's like, How does this trope exist in the same world as like trad relationships where the guy makes all the money and like everything's hunky dory in the house? You know what I mean? Like it's just
because
very...
it's a, you know, it's a woman who was is in a tropey marriage situation.
Well, no. I know the entire modus operandi. I understand what's going on, but what I don't understand is how this entire thing exists. It's like a paradox that exists in society, but
what's the paradox?
The paradox is there's the whole like trad situation.
Yeah.
But then there's the pool boy.
The woman is
There's the whole trad situation, and then but then there's like the pool boy.
Yeah.
And then these things are allowed to exist in the same reality.
Why not? What's the conflict here?
The conflict is that why do guys, knowing that this conflict exists,
mm-hmm.
enter into a trad situation? Look, so situation A and situation B.
Well, they don't
B,
know that that's going to happen. That's the whole point. I mean, she's doing it behind his back in the trope, you know?
Yeah, but okay, so I guess, okay, then I guess my real question is, how is it that these guys don't know that that could happen?
Because
is that an actual
because they're
thing?
Building because they made a mistake from the fucking beginning, which is to build.
But is that an actual thing? Like a guy can actually know that that can happen, but then enter into a situation.
No, I don't think he knows it can happen, but he does make a mistake, which is to.
Okay.
I think the mistake from the get-go is the belief that you should build a marriage around the fact that she's hot, and then what happens is.
Right.
The value of that hotness, you know, it's a dope. It's a. I mean, you know this, like a hot girl is really hot year one, and by year two, she's, you know, she's hot factually, but it's not registering in the same way as it did in year one, is it? You know, as in year
two. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And then not only that, but she's getting older, you know, and she knows it. But if everything's premised around her being hot and she feels like she's losing it because by year three, year four, whatever, year seven. She's 7 years older,
You're 15, yeah.
Yeah. So what's she gonna do? I mean, she's. I mean, I'm not. I'm just saying the trope, right? The trope is that,
dude
comes in, that she has absolutely zero. There's no zero chance that she's gonna want to run away with this guy, right? Her husband's still providing.
Yeah, of course not.
She still needs that validation of like, you know, I can make these guys lust after me if I wanted to, you know. I think that's where
it comes from. No, that's true.
It's just like, I mean, it doesn't make sense in the way of like, okay, cost benefit, right? Like, how does this like improve her, you know, utility function? It doesn't. But there is a clear psychological need for this, because if she built all of her life around her identity as being a hot woman, And she knows that the relationship was foundationally constructed off of him thinking that she was the hottest out of the 30 or 50 women that he dated, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, how are you going to keep that going? Like, that's a recipe for a fucked up marriage. So I guess
what I'm saying is like, okay.
By the way, this is a good, should we stop nominally here and then start like a, because it's 103, should we do a bonus?
Yeah, up to you, man. I mean, it's only 9 here, so.
No, I've got time, but we can call it. Okay. We'll just, I guess we can continue this in the bonus pod. So thanks for listening. If you want to listen to the second part of this conversation about
all this lecherous talk
about these hoes, we'll continue this in the pod in the bonus feed. If you want access, go to patreon.com/planningmac. Okay.